Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Brad. I'm the venue director out here at Holt. Happy Father's Day. I brought my mug, in case any of you are wondering who the best father is. It's me. I've been getting a lot of flack over the fact that this doesn't have an apostrophe where it should go. So if that's bothering you, I thought I would real quick just take a second to fix that. So, I don't know. There you go. Yeah, so there's a clapper. You're a nerd. Congratulations. It's good for you. I'm glad you're happy about the apostrophe. Hey, we've been in this series called Wise Words, looking through mainly the book of Proverbs and thinking about what does God have to say on a variety of different issues? What does God have to say about this? And so we've talked about money, we've talked about sex, power, we talked about poverty a few weeks ago, looking into all these things and saying, if we get right down into this wisdom that Solomon wrote, communicating God's wisdom, which was given to him, what does God have to say about this thing? And so this week we're going to talk about friendship, which is fun and kind of sweet and cute and whatever, exciting. And I thought because of that I would show you just a few pictures of one of my best friends who's really been a friend to me throughout my entire life, whose name is Steve. And so here's a picture of Steve and I when we were just little kids. I'm the one wearing like the screwed up checkerboard looking thing. I don't think you can get that at H&M anymore, but it was popular back then. And then Steve's next to me here in the shirt and tie. He's an accountant, so that would fit now further into life as well. Here's a picture of Steve and I at my wedding to my wife, just to be clear. And then here's a picture of Steve and I at Steve's wedding, which we didn't plan. We're just consistently stupid no matter where we are. And so you can take that down because that's creeping everybody out. But that's cool. So Steve is one of those friends that's been with me for a long time, has been one of my closest friends. And I think at least hopefully most of us have a friend or two like this in our lives that's been around us for a really long time. We've gotten to build a long relationship that's built on a lot of trust and a lot of years spent together. We fought with each other. We've been kind of in the thick of like relationships and heartbreak. We've dated a few of the same girls. Like lots of those weird things in this long friendship. We've had good seasons and bad. Friendship is something really important to us in our culture, isn't it? Friendship is something that we value in some way. We see this even in our entertainment, in our movies. There's this genre of movie called the buddy comedy, right? Where you have two guys or gals who are best friends, who have known each other for all their life, and they're usually like, they're either cops or they're on some sort of weird mission. Usually one's kind of a moron and the other one's kind of just picking up the slack for him, and we see them go through something and fight, but then ultimately we love to see that resolution in the end because we all value friendship and we think that it's something important, and that's not new at all. And so today we're going to jump into the book of Proverbs, mainly looking at what I think is a really fitting thing to look at for Father's Day, because Proverbs is, of course, a letter from Solomon trying to communicate wisdom that God gave him to his kids, to his sons mainly. He addresses this book. And so as we get into it, I think it's really cool to see the value that Scripture puts on this concept of friendship and how Solomon talks to his kids about friendship. He talks a lot about it. And he talks about it in a few different ways. We'll look at the first one here. We'll start off in Proverbs 19, and this is verse 4. It says, "Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friend." Similarly, just a verse 2 down, in verse 6, it says this, "Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts." So the first thing that Solomon really warns his kids of is this, is that there is a type of friend in this life that is really not a friend at all. There is a type of person and a type of people that will come around us that even though we may feel really familiar with, even though we may feel really close to them, Solomon says, these friends are not really friends at all, right? These are fair-weather friends. And I think that we've all had at least a friend or two in our life like this, or at least we've witnessed maybe one of our other friends experience this, where someone comes alongside them, and at first they seem supportive and friendly, but really they're just there either to get money or to get something we have to offer or really just to use that other person. And what we see is that it seems like the minute that adversity comes into that person's life, those are the friends that flee, right? Like the minute that things aren't comfortable anymore, the minute that hard things come, those tend to be the kind of friends that go away really quickly. Been working in ministry for a little while now, and one of the privileges I get to have is to do funerals now and again. And I think one of the cool things to see is how not just for the deceased, but for really the family and friends of the deceased, how their true friends flock to them in those moments. How those people that even if your grandfather died or your mother died or your brother or sister passed away, that those are the friends who would be there with you and support you. There's a different kind of friendship than this fair weather friendship that Solomon wants to warn his kids about. But clearly he doesn't think that that's the only kind of friendship. I think this verse is awesome. This is again from Proverbs in 18:24, where it says this. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Solomon tells his kids, look, it is not about how many friends you have. It is not about building a wealth of people who want to be near you. He says, you can have all the friends in the world. You can have all these people who want to be near you. But if they're this false kind of friend, if there's no one to support you, it's really easy for you to still come to ruin. But he says, there is this kind of friend. There is this kind of friend that sticks closer than even a brother would stick to you. And in this culture, man, family was elevated really highly. And so for Solomon to say that there's a friend who's close to you than even a brother could be to you, that even though you may have a multitude of friends and you can still fail, there are these friends, these solid friends who can be with you through all of life. I love what Solomon says in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's another book he wrote. It's a little different than Proverbs. If you've read Ecclesiastes, it's kind of like if you're reading like the emo diary of a teenage girl. Like it's really just, there's a lot of like, oh, life is pointless. Like a lot of that kind of stuff, but in there, I think there's this awesome section on what friendship looks like, and hear how Solomon talks about it. He says, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Solomon says this to his kids. He says, look, friendship is really important. These solid friends, these kinds of friends who have each other's back, these friends who are close together, who spend time together, who invest in each other, these kinds of friends who are stronger because of each other are really important, because when hard times come, these are the friends who are there for each other. Even more simply, Proverbs 17:17 says this, a friend loves at all times, and a brother... Or a friend loves at all times. A friend loves at all times. And I think that's a really succinct way to put how Solomon sees friendship. And so for the rest of our time today, we're going to spend most of it in Proverbs 27. So flip there, tap there if you've got a Bible or one on your phone. Follow along on the screen, because I think what we're going to see is this is the longest section that Solomon will spend in all of Proverbs, just working through lots of different relationships. And so we're just going to hit the verses in there that talk about friendship. This is Proverbs 27, and we'll start at 5 and just see these different characteristics that Solomon describes friendship as. So Proverbs 27, we'll start at 5 and 6. Solomon says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, and profuse are the kisses of an enemy. So this first characteristic Solomon gives to friendship is this, is that sometimes friendship needs to hurt a little bit. Solomon says, look, it's better to have rebuke. It's better for someone to call you out because they love you than have that love stay hidden with somebody that just wants to say, oh yeah, everything's fine, who never wants to bring anything up. He says, the wounds of a friend, literally this is like the jabs or the stabs of a friend. He says, the wounds of a friend are faithful. They're useful. They're something to spur you on, to make you better. And an enemy is someone who's going to constantly give you kisses often. who's not really for you, who's really against you, but will constantly compliment you, will constantly say to you the things that you want to hear, will never call you out about the things in your life that you really need to not deal with or you really want to ignore. And here's the thing that I think is true for us, is that we tend to surround ourselves in our society with a whole bunch of people that aren't really friends at all, right? Like how many friends do you have? Okay, I'm going to check real quick. 1,034. And I'm just going to wait here for a second and see if I get any more. I post lots of cool stuff. Funny pictures of my kids. Nope, nobody. That's cool. So still 1,034. We tend to surround ourselves with a whole lot of people who we don't really want to speak into our lives, who are acquaintances, who are fair-weather friends. But what Solomon says here is this true friendship, this friendship that you really want to seek out, this friendship is a friendship that's willing to call each other out when things are going wrong. This is a friendship that's willing to say something, that's willing to say, hey, you're doing that wrong. Hey, you're on a dangerous path right now. And Solomon's not the only one to say this. Jesus said this too. This is Luke 17:3. Jesus said, pay attention to yourselves. If your brother sins, rebuke him. That's just to say, stop it. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. Solomon is saying the same thing, that part of what it means to be a friend, part of what it means to have a friend is to have somebody in your life who can call you out when something's not going correctly, which reminds me of a story. Close friends of my family, we kind of knew them our whole life. They were really good friends of my dad. We were out at their house one day, and they were doing some exterior remodeling. They were adding like a big porch onto their house, and to do that, there was like a part of their roof that they had to cut off. And so my dad's friend Ernie was up on the roof, and he was cutting this section off, and we were kind of watching him, and we all looked up, and like five of us noticed at the same time that here's Ernie with this chainsaw making a chainsaw noise, like or whatever a chainsaw sounds like. I don't know. I'm not good at sound effects. And he's cutting the roof, and we all see that he's standing on the part of the roof that he's cutting, which is a bad thing to do with a chainsaw. Like, you don't have to watch This Old House very often to know that that's a poor move. But this chainsaw is so loud, and it's going, and so all of us are going, Ernie! Ernie! Like, stop it! Like, stop! And finally, he looked up and turned the chainsaw off. We said, you're standing on the roof that you're cutting. He went, oh, I guess that's a bad idea, and stepped off of it. And what's hilarious is I didn't know this, but he was here last night, and I told that story. My parents had just randomly brought him, so he was like right in front of me. I was like, oh, sorry. So because the point of this is not a happy one. It's that you need somebody to tell you when you're being an idiot. Like, somebody in your life has to have permission when you are walking down a dangerous path, when you are acting outside the wisdom of God, when you are on a track that's going to really mess you up, going to hurt you, going to hurt people around you. You need to have someone in your life who can faithfully wound you. Someone who you trust enough to really give the privilege and to give permission to call you out when things aren't going correctly. One of the things that for a long time now, I've had an agreement with my wife that she would know the people in my life that if I'm ever to start to really act improperly towards her or treat our kids in a way that's just wrong and she doesn't feel like she can say something, that I've told her, that, you know what, you need to know that these few people are the people that I've given permission to call me out. And so if you ever feel unsafe or you feel like you can't say something, go to this guy, go to Steve. Go to Austin, who's a friend of mine from my life group. Go to these people who have permission to call me out. Who in your life have you given permission to call you out? Your spouse should be one of them, right? That our relationship with our spouse should be a relationship that has a deep friendship to it. But who else in your life have you given permission to call you out when things aren't going well, when you're making a mistake? If you don't have anyone like that around you, I think a great place to maybe start to look for that's in a life group here at Riv. Rivchurch.com/life groups. You can sign up. You can get plugged in. You can find a community of people that's pointed towards the same mission, that's a part of what you believe. And I hope that it's not going to happen that every person in that group is your best friend. It's not going to happen that everyone in there you have an instant connection with. But I hope that if you don't have someone in your life like this, that you can find a place to make these intentional friendships to say, hey, I give you permission to call me out. I give you permission to warn me, even though it might hurt me when I'm going down a road. And you can do that for each other also. So that's the first thing Solomon tells his kids is, look, sometimes friendship hurts. Friendship calls each other out. He continues on with more, though. Continue in Proverbs 27. This is verse 10. It says, do not forsake your friend and your father's friend. And do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. Now, it's a little bit of a weird verse. I don't think what Solomon's saying here is that we shouldn't have close relationships with our family or it's bad to go to family when we're in need. I think he's more saying don't just go to your family in need. But the main point he's trying to make here is this, is that we need to invest in friendships and relationships that are close to us. That we need to invest in people around us, in our general vicinity, people that are our neighbors, people that we can drive to their house, people that we can interact with and see. We need to invest in those relationships because often when calamity strikes, when there's crisis, when we need somebody close, don't we? Somebody that we can reach out to. And I'm not saying that we don't want to invest in long-term relationships. I'm not saying that it's not good to keep up with old friends and family. But what I think Solomon is trying to teach us here is that there is great value in friends, in neighbors who are near to us. That sometimes those people can be even more valuable and friendly. People that you're willing to invest in. People around you that you're willing to give a piece of your life to and let them give you a piece of their life. And I think we have a tendency to really avoid this right now because I think we have all these different ways to be connected to all sorts of different people and to really ignore people around us. I thought this quote was really interesting. This is a guy named Oliver Berkman. He writes for The Guardian, a British publication. Here's what he said. He says, for centuries, we've been uprooting ourselves from the communities in which we're born. But until recently, on arriving in a new place, you'd inevitably lose your ties with the one that you left. You'd be forced to invest fully in a new social circle. But these days, thanks to motorways and airliners and email and Skype, you need never cut those ties. You never leave your old life behind, and so your emotional investments are scattered. Ironically, it's precisely your continuing bonds with the people that you've loved for the longest that risk leaving you feeling alienated where you are. I think that's a lot of the wisdom that Solomon's trying to give us here is this, that we need to invest where we are, that we need to find new bonds and new relationships. And yeah, Facebook is awesome for keeping up with people that we haven't seen in a while. It's great on Instagram to watch pictures of friends from college who have babies and to see people get married and to get to interact with their lives. And that's all cool. And I think a lot of that is really a gift and is an awesome thing that technology has brought us. But what it's done is it's made us sometimes think that it's okay to shut us off from real people that we can see in real life and have real conversations with. And we've sectioned ourselves off and we've built these walls and sometimes we can be perfectly happy living within this little utopia of just the perfection that we see online and never invest with people around us who we can see their faults, who can see ours and who can invest with us at the places that we are. So Solomon says, look, there's great value in close relationships with people that are near you in proximity. Invest in those. And lastly, from Proverbs 27, this is probably one of the most famous verses in the Bible, really, and especially when it pertains to friendship. This is Proverbs 27:17, where Solomon says, iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. This is a really kind of graphic picture of what friendship looks like, isn't it? Solomon says this. He says, the point of friendship is that you become better with each other. And the point of friendship is that two people rub against each other and that there is friction there and like two swords being sharpened that they're better because of it. And I really, really wanted to illustrate this for you. I wanted to like put a bench grinder up here and take a sword and like shoot arcs of sparks into the audience. I thought that would be amazing. And several people told me that I couldn't, that it would void our insurance policy. And like there's paper back here on the wall and I can see how it would be bad. But I want you... I want you to in some way just grasp kind of the violence of this. That true friendship sometimes has a lot of friction as we better each other. That sometimes when we open up our lives, when we say, hey, you can call me out, when we can say, hey, I want you to better me, that's a friction thing. And sometimes there are pieces of us that need to be nicked off, like those high points on a sword. That we need people in our lives who can do this, who can be in this intentional relationship with us, who can call us out, who can say to us that they know that true friendship is constantly pushing forward. And what it's pushing forward towards, and what I think we really need to define these friendships as, is these friendships that are centered on pointing each other back to Jesus. That we have these gospel friends that are constantly reminding us of our need for Jesus. Not friends who will discourage us when things aren't going well. Not friends who will really even blame us for every calamity in life. But friends who will accurately look at our lives and tell us about the need for Jesus that we continually have. Who will constantly remind us of God's perfection displayed in the person of Jesus. Who will constantly remind us that even though it's hard and we feel like a failure, that Jesus has already beat sin and death on our behalf. Friends that will constantly push us towards the gospel. Who won't say that they're the answer, and who won't ask us to be the answer for all of their problems and set up these weird codependencies, but friends that will constantly point us towards and remind us of our need for Jesus. This is what true friendship looks like. True friendship constantly pushes each other towards the gospel, and it can call each other out when we walk away from the wisdom of God and when we start to not depend on the promise and the power that the gospel has for us. This is what true friendship looks like. True friendship constantly points to Jesus because Jesus is the perfect example of friendship. And he said so. Turn to the book of John. John chapter 15, this is verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. Jesus is the perfect example of friendship. That what Jesus says, you want to know what friendship looks like? You want to know what this relationship really looks like that Solomon's describing? It looks like what I did. It looks like a man in Jesus who would take upon all the sins, the faults, the way that we don't measure up to who God is, all the ways that we don't reflect God's character. It's a man who would take that on himself, who would suffer and die to lay down his life for people that he called friends. He says that's what true friendship is. And so my command to you is to love each other. To show friendship to each other, to show sacrificial love like I showed to you to each other, that this is what the essence of friendship is a sacrificial love, is a laying down of oneself with nothing in return. He says, I've perfectly shown you what friendship is. And he says this in 14. He says, you're my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Jesus says, I'm not going to call you a servant. Jesus says, I can call you a friend. I can say that I am your friend because I have invited you into the plan. I have invited you and told you about everything that I know that God is doing. I've called you on mission with me. And so Jesus is our friend. But a lot of weird stuff has been done with this. And sometimes we think of that in really a way too buddy-buddy kind of way. And we forget about how God is holy, how Jesus is God, that he is certainly above us. And he's not our buddy, like a buddy comedy buddy. He's not like my friend Steve. He says, look, I'm your friend because of how I've treated you, and I'm your friend because of what I've shared with you. I'm your friend because I have called you on mission with me, because our lives are pointed at the same thing. You're not a servant in this. You're not a pawn being played by God. You are a co-heir in the inheritance of Jesus because of what he bought for you on the cross. And he has set us on a mission with him. He has revealed to us God's plan to want to provide salvation to anyone that would believe in the truth of the gospel. And so he says, you're on mission with me. I've told you everything that God's told me about what we're doing here. And likewise, I think our closest life and friends in life are people that are on the same mission as we are. I think it's really important to have friends that aren't believers, that don't know anything about Jesus. I think it's really important to invest in those relationships. I think those become inroads to share the gospel with those people, and that's a thing that we should do. But I also think that it's really important that we have friends that think the same way we do about the most important things in our lives. People who rely on the gospel. These are the only friends that can point us to the gospel. These are the only friends that are going to heed the call of God's wisdom. They're going to call us out when we start to walk away from that. We need friends who are on mission with us, who have been called into the same thing we are, to proclaim the liberating power of the gospel, to be constantly reminding ourselves of the work of Jesus on our behalf. We need friends who are on mission with us. And Jesus finishes the section with this. 16 says, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give to you. These things I command you so that you will love one another." Jesus said, look, the whole reason I've called you my friend, the whole reason I did all of this is so that you could experience the love of God and then you could share the love of God. That's the whole point. He says, my commandment to you was to love one another. And here's the thing. I filled that commandment for you by calling you my friend. I did that for you. There's no pressure in that because we will never love perfectly. You will never be the perfect friend. You will never be able to perfectly embody what Jesus has done. Jesus says, I have fulfilled that for you. I have taken that burden off of you so that I can call you into this mission that I am on to bring the gospel to other people, all so that you can love each other in the first place, is what I just said a minute ago. I've shown you love. I've called you friend so that you might be a friend and that you might show love. So what do we do with all of this? What do you think about this? I think just three simple things. I think first, surround yourself with gospel friends. Surround yourself with people who are on mission with you, who are focused on the gospel of Jesus, who will point you toward Jesus. Find people like this. And I think the tendency is to be one of two things. If you're like me, I'm pretty extroverted, and so I love having friends. I'm way more at the beginning. Like, it's hard for me not to just build multiply out of a circle and have no close friends. But maybe some of you are more on the introverted side, and you don't want to have these relationships that maybe scares you in some way, or maybe you just haven't found that. Whatever it is, find and seek out gospel friends who you can let speak into your life, who you can give permission to call you back, to remind you of what Jesus has done, to remind you of how God sees you so that you can press forward in that. And so surround yourself with gospel friends. Second, be a gospel friend. I think the first place to do this is with people that are extending friendship to you, that you would likewise back with them, be pointing them to Jesus, be constantly just in life with them, caring about them, showing them that sacrificial love. But I think the other thing with this is that it's a good thing and it's an awesome thing to do what Jesus did, where he said, look, you didn't choose me, I chose you. To extend friendship to some people that maybe you don't want to have friendship with, maybe some people who are hard for you to love, I think this is an amazing thing to do. I think it's a thing we're called to do, is to extend this kind of friendship to people that don't know Jesus. To find those relationships with, maybe it's a close family member, a friend, a coworker, someone who's far from God, who doesn't believe in the gospel or know about Jesus, and to just show them love and friendship, to support them, to constantly, you know, give answer for why you have hope in Jesus, and to point them towards Jesus, even though they're never going to be able to reciprocate that fully until they believe. I think that's an amazing thing to do. And then to extend it to your brothers and sisters, to other believers, and to show them love, to support them, to be the church and surround them. If you're in a life group, or if you get in a life group, or just in any form of community that you find around here, to show that love, to sacrifice for each other, to be gospel friends to each other. And then lastly, so this is to rest in the friendship of Jesus. Is that all of this can feel like a lot of pressure, especially if close relationships are something that maybe you're scared of because you've been hurt by one. All of this can seem difficult, and that's why we can rest in the fact that Jesus has called us a friend, that Jesus has ultimately done everything that we require to be right with God, and that God looks at us and he's pleased. We rest in that friendship, and as we rest in that friendship, hopefully that will well up in us and that will motivate us that we would show love to others, that we would be able to fulfill that command of God, that we would be able to show that friendship back to Jesus because he has already loved us. He has already secured for us this promise in him that we get to have friends, that we get to be friends, and that we get to experience the love and rest in the friendship that Jesus has extended to us. Would you pray with me? Oh God, we can be really, really independent and we can really, really want to not seek out other people that you've gifted us to support us. And then worst of all, we can sometimes turn our back and pretend that we don't even need your friendship. And so God, I pray that we would be really encouraged by the fact primarily that you have loved us and you've called us your friends, that you sacrificed for us, that you saved us even when we were far from you and would have never chosen you. God, and I pray that that can press us to let other people speak into our lives, to have these relationships that are so centered and reliant upon the work of Jesus on the cross and his resurrection, that they can press us forward in life and that we can sharpen each other like iron sharpens iron. And God, I pray that through learning to show this kind of love as your spirit works in us, as you remind us of your accomplishment for us, that we'd be able to extend that friendship to people that don't know you and that they'd be able to see little glimpses of the friendship that you want to extend to them through our relationships with them. So God, I pray that we'd be intentional with this. God, I pray that you would convict us where we are selfish. And God, you would remind us and encourage us that you've done the work for us. In your name we pray. Amen.